Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the Extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. Today is Horticulture Day. I'm Charity Nebbe. Harvest for most fruits is still quite a ways away, but that far-off harvest is affected by weather conditions, pests, diseases, and care throughout the growing season. Randall Voss is Iowa State University commercial fruit crop specialist, and he is with us today. Hello, Randall.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here. And let's talk about frost first. I mean, a lot of us got lucky with frost impact on blossoms on our fruit trees, et cetera, this spring. What are you hearing about frost damage?
Yeah, I think most people did get pretty lucky. Some strawberries did get dinged a bit. And so if you kind of look at when strawberries bloom, sometimes if they had frost damage, you'll see there's a black center to those flowers. And we did see, especially in the southern part of Iowa, some strawberries have some blossom damage. So,
with strawberries in the home garden, of course, strawberries continuously blossom for a time. You have a window of opportunity for fruit. Is that, obviously, that's more of a blow for commercial growers, but it's not a complete loss, right?
No, it was mostly on what we call the kingberry. So like you mentioned, strawberries kind of bloom over a period of time. And those, the kingberry is the first blossom, is the biggest strawberry, it's the earliest strawberry. And the people that did have damage, that's the one they lost. The other ones are looking pretty good.
All right. Well, that, of course, is part of the process that we have no control over. So it's always just chance every year whether we're going to make it through unscathed or not. But let's talk about disease control, because that's something that we do have a little more control over. And it starts with cultivar selections, right?
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's tough to grow fruit in a climate that's warm and humid and variable weather. And so I always kind of generally recommend people, especially if you're doing this at home, you want to try and pick something that's got a lot of disease resistance, especially, let's say, apples, scab resistance, or fire blight resistance, because it's tough enough to keep ahead of the insects. Controlling those fungal and bacterial diseases is real tough. And so some of those cultivars may not be what you find in the store, like Honeycrisp or something like that. But if you want to do a low amount of pest control, it's tough if you're not choosing disease resistant cultivars to begin with.
Okay, so don't just impulsively pick on, hey, this is the kind of apple that I really love. Do your homework is what you're saying.
I mean, you can, right? You know, people like impulse buys, but it's going to make it tougher for you to get a quality fruit at home if you're not selecting disease-resistant ones.
All right. And that, of course, is one of the first hurdles. But there are also cultural practices that you need to keep in mind, especially you mentioned apple trees. And apple trees are just one of those things where our climate is great for growing apple trees, except for the pest and disease.
Yeah, you know, proper pruning, just getting sunlight in any fruit crop is going to definitely help things. You know, getting that direct sun inside the canopy of about any fruit crop is going to help it dry out quicker. That UV light actually helps keep powdery mildew at bay and get better airflow. And even things like in the strawberry patch, if those fruits are on the ground, it makes it a lot tougher for you to not have, if those strawberries are touching the ground, they're more prone to rotting. And so just some simple things like pruning and open canopy, and if there are fruits that are close to the ground, making sure they're not touching the ground will go a long ways in helping keep that fruit clean.
If you've got strawberries that are heavy enough that they're touching the ground, what do you do about that? How can you influence that?
Yeah. You know, I've actually seen a lot of pictures this year of strawberry patches having winter damage just from the cold winter because they weren't mulched over. And so, you know, if you're seeing some issues with your strawberries where they're not coming back like you maybe thought, mulching them over the winter and then pulling that mulch to the side. And then a lot of times the berries will just set on top of that mulch. And so it starts with mulching them in over the winter to kind of help them with buffering those temperatures, and then that mulch will keep those berries from setting on the ground too.
Let's talk about fungal diseases, because that's a particular concern of yours. Tell me why.
Yeah, fungal diseases are tough. You don't see Japanese beetles, you see them flying around and other things like that. But fungal diseases are really tough because most of the products we have to control them, especially the ones like the homeowner will have access to, they're primarily preventative. And so that's where it's real tough on those. It takes some real good scouting to actually see them on the plant. And a lot of them, we need those products on before the infection occurs to really get good control. If you have a raging infection out there, it's almost too late. And so that's why I really encourage people to buy cultivars that have as much fungal disease resistance as possible, because it's real tough to stay ahead of it.
So if you have a fungal disease that takes out your crop one season, is that something that you can prevent the next season?
Yeah, there's generally, not with every disease, but there's a pretty strong correlation between if you had a problem last year, it's likely that a lot of those spores are going to overwinter and it'll be a problem the following year. And so if you have a problem one year, chances are, if the weather's similar the next year, that you'll probably have a heightened risk of it happening the following year too. And so you'd want to, apply some plant protectants at the appropriate time to control it. And, one big thing is, with any fruit crop is we try and remove any rotten fruit that is on the ground and those types of things. That'll help with a lot of insect and a lot of other diseases. So it's not fun to pick up a mushy strawberry that may be full of sap beetles, but, if you want to reduce the risk of having more diseases and insects in the crop that's still to come, it's best to get those out of there.
Now, a lot of us are not very good at identifying what is happening to our trees or to our plants. How do you identify a fungal infection or another disease problem?
Yeah, that's a good question, because there's a lot of different things out there that want to attack our plants. Fungal diseases, some kind of stereotypes of them, if it's powdery mildew, if you kind of look at the surface of that leaf and you hold it in the sun, sometimes you can kind of catch the start of powdery mildew because it's on the surface. There'll be a little shininess to it where you can see the little fungus. But other fungal diseases, it starts with a spore, and most fungal diseases are spread in moisture, not all. Like powdery mildew can attack whether it's dry or in moisture, but most fungal diseases spread in moisture. And so quite often in a wet year, we'll have a rain event, and then a week or two or three later, we'll start to see maybe some concentric circles on the plant. And sometimes there's little black dots on the foliage too that are like fruiting bodies, so kind of pimple-like things that will ooze out spores. So they're real variable in terms of what they look like, but those are just a couple clues.
All right. And of course, the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic at Iowa State University is a great resource for that as well. Yep. Let's talk about pests a little bit, because again, with fruit, pests can be a real problem.
Yeah. Japanese beetles is the one that everyone, bemoans, and it's a tough one. But plants can probably handle a little more damage from foliar feeding than maybe what we think. Cosmetically, it doesn't look nice, but in some crops, 20% defoliation is probably the limit. But when we look at these plants and the Japanese beetles have been chomping on them, we tend to overreact sometimes. But the most damaging ones for fruits are the insects that attack the fruit itself. We're growing these plants for that fruit. And then, my kids go out and pick some cherries off my cherry tree. And it's not very fun if there's a little maggot inside there. And we're hitting some kind of critical times for some of those pests right now. Maybe we pass it on a couple, but there's different ways you can scout for them. You can put yellow sticky cards in your tree to try and catch some of those different flies. Some people will put those red sticky balls in apple trees as kind of a way to know if they have some apple maggots. So having some stuff out there to kind of tell when they're showing up instead of waiting to see the damage is pretty critical, because once you see the damage, it's almost too late. You have to be proactive and look for them, look for the insect itself, not wait to see the damage.
And if you have a particular pest 1 year, does that also increase the odds that that pest will return the next season?
Yeah, it always heightens the odds. Yeah. I mean, weather changes every year, but it's generally pretty good chance that it will be worse, or you'll have it the next year too. Yep.
Let's talk just briefly about growing wine grapes in Iowa, because May is Iowa Wine Month, and you work with a lot of people who grow grapes in Iowa. That's a growing sector of production, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those industries that's been around, you know, 20 years or so, and just trying to gain market share and market recognition for those products. And you know, sometimes there's some stereotypes around Iowa wines that may or may not be true. And so, you know, the proclamation is just a good awareness for people to remind them that, hey, there is a local industry, and that local industry supports local growers. And so there's a lot of interesting things to try. And there's some new cultivars out there that I think some wineries are trying out that I think they're excited about. Couple of them are Petite Pearl, is a red wine grape variety that a lot of people are excited about. So you might be seeing that on some bottles here soon. And Frontenac Blanc is another white cultivar that I think people are excited about. So there might be some new cultivars to try in the next year or two that maybe people haven't tried before.
All right, and of course, a lot of people love growing grapes at home as well, right?
Yeah, seedless table grapes are probably one of the most underplanted fruits, I think, in Iowa. You know, we can produce them pretty well, and they have excellent flavor. And so that's probably a very underplanted crop here for backyards or even commercially. You know, you don't really see a lot of seedless table grapes yourself at farmers market, but there's quite a few nice cultivars we can grow in your backyard that do really good.
Something to think about. Randall Voss is Iowa State University Commercial Fruit Crop Specialist. For more gardening information and tips, you can subscribe to our Garden Variety newsletter. You can find out more at iowapublicradio.org/garden. I'm Charity Nebbe.
Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the Extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join our conversation with your questions. Give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We've been talking about growing fruit so far with Randall Voss, Iowa State University Commercial Fruit Crop Specialist. Also with us now, Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
And Mark Vitosh is also here, DNR Forester. Hello, Mark.
Good morning.
Wonderful to have all of you here. And Mark, I have to ask you, how has your morel mushroom season gone?
It started really well. Yeah. I took my aunt out, who's in her mid-70s, for our annual hunt about 2 weeks ago, and we found 50 that day, a bunch of grays and yellows. Things are going well, but I had to go out of town last week, and I kind of missed, I think, what would have probably been pretty decent last week. And so one last effort last night, and I found 4 large yellows, but they were pretty dry. I think listening to people, it sounds like people have been finding them. Neat thing happened to me. I had a landowner I've been working with for multiple years. He sent me an email of all his kids holding morel mushrooms saying, "Thank you, Mark, for helping us manage our forest and allowing our family to hunt mushrooms." So it was really neat thing to see.
That's very cool. Does it feel like it's been a good season? I've seen a lot of social media posts of people feeling pretty successful.
So the last 2 years, we got things started off well, and then it got really dry. The temperatures went up. We didn't get the moisture. But about a week or two ago, we got timely moisture, depending where you were at. So I think the conditions weren't terrible, weren't too bad. So I think they're probably okay out there.
Right. And that brings this morel season to a close.
Well, at least for me.
Right.
But it's just starting as you go further north.
Right.
You know, just a couple days ago, they were finding them up in northeast Iowa and stuff like that. So kind of depends where you're at.
All right. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call, 866-780-9100. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Lewis is on the line first in Anamosa. Hello.
Good morning.
Hi. What's your question?
I picked up a half foot load of the black dirt from Mount Trashmore. So I'm looking for use with existing flower beds and also planting some oak trees, specifically the do's and don'ts.
Okay, so for people who don't live in eastern Iowa, Mount Trashmore is the landfill up in the Cedar Rapids area. So concerns, do's and don'ts about, was this compost, did you say, Lewis?
Yeah, just this black dirt compost there that they make down there.
Okay, all right. Aaron, you want to weigh in on that?
You know, typically the compost that you get from large facilities like that is pretty high quality. And so it's a great amendment, especially for the vegetable garden. You can also spread it almost like a mulch, kind of like an inch or so thick over like perennial borders and kind of those kind of areas to help kind of improve soil. The worms will help work it in. So you don't have to necessarily dig it in, although you could kind of lightly cultivate it into the top inch or so if you wanted to. But they tend to be really nice sources of high quality compost.
Does that help you out, Lewis, or do you have any specific follow-ups?
Oh, that's it. How about planting the oak trees? Can I use it as a mixture with dirt for the oak trees?
Well, the thing I tell you, Lewis, is actually really when you're planting trees, you don't want to add a lot of amendments because if you're going to amend, you have to amend the whole area. And tree roots can go well beyond the edge of the branches. So you can have a 50-foot tree with roots 100 feet out or more. And so a lot of times if we amend that area where we plant that tree and we amend it well and the soil conditions around it aren't so good, the tree will want to tend to stay there. Those roots will want to stay there and not really spread out. So with trees, I tend to avoid amending the soil unless I can amend the whole yard, which is usually not typical. With a garden, that's different with your root systems and stuff. But for trees, I probably would avoid it.
All right. Lewis, thanks so much for the call. 866-780-9100 is the number. We've got a couple lines open for you right now. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Karen in Des Moines asks, every year in the summer, I get rust in my lawn. Are there cultural practices or chemical treatments that will help with this? The lawn is mostly bluegrass and gets full sun.
Yeah, typically, if you can try to encourage as much or as little wetness on the leaf surface as possible by watering kind of in the morning, making sure that it's getting full sun, especially earlier in the day. We often see that rust kind of in shadier areas. We often find it because we find it on our shoes as we're mowing. In reality, most of the time, it doesn't like impact the lawn in a huge way. And typically, especially once things dry out in the summer, we'll see it kind of grow. The grass will kind of grow out of it. So it's not something that most homeowners have to like stay up worrying about at night or anything like that. But anything you can do to reduce the amount of wetness that sits on the leaf will help.
All right, Karen, thanks for the question. 866-780-9100 is the number. Bob is on the line in Bettendorf with a question for you, Randall. Hi, Bob.
Yes, good morning. I'm really an apple guy, but I do have some peach trees, which I don't know much about. I've been very successful in raising them, but last year, one of the two trees, instead of full fruit, it developed this rather grotesque small mutant, looked like it was been attacked by mites or something. I'm not sure what. And I wondered what it was. I was supposed to, management, that's my wife, I was supposed to be doing some research on this, which I haven't. So I said, I'll call them.
Yeah, you know, there's a few things it could be. You know, it could be there's fruit moth or plum curculio inside there or something along those lines. So I would probably just guess that it had a super heavy infestation of, you know, some of those maggots that you see, or caterpillars or grub that you see in those fruits. But yeah, that's just a guess.
So
how would I prevent this?
Yeah, so insecticide applications shortly after bloom to, you know, a month after bloom, we'll cover a lot of those. Yeah, depending on what it is exactly, the products will vary, but a lot of times those home orchard sprays will cover most of those pests. But at bloom or shortly before bloom to about a month after bloom is going to cover a lot of those pests.
That help you out, Bob?
I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think this counts as doing your research. So good job, Bob. Thanks a lot for the call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Peg is on the line next in Muscatine. Hi, Peg.
Hi there.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a sweet autumn clematis that is down on my property. I can't get to it. I've had surgery. So I didn't get it cut back in the spring. It looks like to me that it's growing out from the top, and you can still see some of the old branches. Mm-hmm. I have friends coming over this weekend. Should I tell them to prune out the dead branches, cut it down again, or what should I tell them to do with it, if anything?
Well, I mean, you can. It'll be a little bit more it won't be quite as kept looking, but you don't have to do anything to it, really. Often we will cut off sweet autumn clematis early in the season because it grows vigorously and it blooms late in the season, so pruning it off in the spring won't affect the flowering. This early, you might get away with doing that and still not have much problem, but I would be inclined to just let it be, and it will be a little bit bigger this year. You might see some of those dead branches, but for the most part, it usually kind of covers it all up. So at this point in the season, since it's already starting to really leaf out, I might just let it be.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. That is exactly what I needed to know. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call, Peg, and I hope you recover quickly. Next up, Dave is on the line in Hamilton County. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Yeah, I've got a question about a one-year-old grove, 18 inch tall, a white spruce and Norway spruce. The white spruce was covered by about a third of snow, and the top half has lost its needles. And I'm just wondering if it's going to survive. The bottom third is budding out where it was covered with snow. The top half, would you replace them, or will they try to somehow form a tree out of that?
You'll probably know in a couple weeks, Dave. What I would do on that top part is take your thumbnail and just scrape to see if it's still green. And then if there's a few buds, just take a little knife or just your fingernails and squeeze those buds to see if they're green. If those buds are not green at all and they're dead, that tells you that top is dead. So on a spruce like that, it's going to be really hard to develop a normal crown and stuff again, so you may have to start over. But if they're going to leaf out, they probably should leaf out within the next few weeks.
Okay, and I was told this damage probably occurred in the Christmas blizzard when it was sandblasted for 3 days.
You know, I'll tell you, the last couple years, not as much this winter, but last winter going into the spring, the following spring, we had a lot of what we call winter damage with the winds and different things that we really didn't have explanation. I mean, we associated with weather and stuff like that. But obviously on young trees like that, if the area that was protected, obviously by the snow, it's insulated, that's going to be much more protected. And if the other area is showing damage, it makes you think that cold weather And a lot of it, too, is as you develop these trees and you plant in the future, it's always good, and you probably did this, to water good in the fall if it's dry to give them some help. But when that ground's frozen, there's just not much you can do if we get the wrong conditions.
And that Christmas blizzard was miserable.
Yes, I wouldn't disagree. So it probably was weather-related, but time is going to tell you, but it doesn't sound real good, Dave.
Dave, thanks a lot for the call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh, Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Randall Voss, Iowa State University Commercial Fruit Crop Specialist. And let's go next to Mark in Ames. Hi, Mark.
Hello there. I've got a question about bark left over from splitting wood. I've got some that I finally got around to after the derecho. It's kind of old, wet, and all this. Can it be turned into the soil and maybe used in a flower bed or anything like that, or is it best to dispose of it in another way?
Aaron?
I would say it's probably already kind of getting a little bit broken down. You could almost use it like mulch if you wanted to, especially if you can break it up a little bit. And it would work fine. You could also turn it into the soil. It certainly would break down slower than, you know, it would act more like a twig would if you put it in your compost pile, but it would still break down over time and be a nice addition.
Okay. Yeah, I just heard earlier the talk about mold or fungus and all that, and I wasn't sure if that stuff that doesn't look real healthy would be bad for the soil, but sounds like I can go ahead and do it that way.
Yeah, yeah, and there will be mold and fungus on it. It's just the good stuff that helps break things down.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. Next up, let's go to Will in Johnston. Hi, Will.
Yes, good morning.
Hi.
I've got a weeping cherry, and it's got some dead branches. They sort of leafed out early on, but now those leaves have withered. Is it all right to prune those now, or should I wait?
All right, I'm going to just repeat that because you're a little bit difficult to understand with a bad phone connection. But a weeping cherry with that leafed out early on, but now it's died back. Will?
There are some branches of the leaves have died back.
Okay, some branches of the leaves have died back. So
I'm wondering if I can, yes.
All right, who wants to take that one? Because a weeping cherry, that feels like that could fall into three different categories. So who's my volunteer?
I can start.
Okay, Aaron.
It's not unusual for trees that are under stress to leaf out and then see some die back first thing in the spring. Cherries are often under stress in Iowa. They're not the longest term tree for us. Our climate isn't very favorable for a lot of those different varieties of cherries. And I would say if the branch has died, you can prune it out. I'd probably make sure that it's dead before I did that. But chances are that if it leafed out and then those leaves dried up and the buds dried up and it's not going to re-leaf out because the buds are dried up, you could prune it out.
All right. And Will, did you have a lawn question too?
Well, yeah, I've got various species in my lawn, apart from the grass. Some clover, some little, I think it's wood sorrel, maybe, little oxalis-type plant, mm-hmm. yellow flower. And I like all this stuff. And there's this one, I thought it was Creeping Charlie, but it might not be. It might be Speedwell, perhaps. But they're really small blue or very pale blue flowers, almost, yeah, like pinhead size. And I'm just wondering, at what point do they become overwhelming to the lawn? I mean, I'm guessing they're putting something in the lawn, but I'm not sure.
So they will be...
Over, it does nitrogen and so forth.
Right, right. It really is kind of a personal preference kind of situation. For some folks... they become overwhelming as soon as they show up, and for others, they welcome them because it's green and doesn't require a lot of care per se. So it really is kind of a personal preference as to how much you're willing to accept in the lawn. In general, most of the time when we see weeds, like and like the little blue flower, it could be a, of speedwell. It could also be henbit. There are a few other things that kind of look a little bit like creeping Charlie that would be blooming. And those things are usually there because the grass isn't doing very well. Grass is typically very competitive. And so if the grass isn't doing well because there's a little bit more shade or something like that, or leaves sat on it all winter and kind of smothered things out, these plants kind of fill in those gaps. And if you're okay with that, you can have as much of it or as little of it as you want. It doesn't really, I mean, it really is kind of like what you're willing to accept.
Will, thanks a lot for the call. And here's we'll try to do this one quick before we get to the break, Mark. Nora in Pleasant Hill says, we planted Norway spruce and red cedar trees from the state nursery this spring, and they've sunk down a little below ground level after watering as we had loosened soil. Should we dig them up and put them higher or leave them alone?
I would try to stick the shovel. I wouldn't literally dig them up, but if we can stick the shovel in and raise them a little bit, because you want that basically root collar at ground level. And if you continue to let it sink and fill in, that could cause issues long term.
All right. So and just, right now you may have the power to influence this, right?
Right. So if they can just stick their shovel in and maybe stick a little soil under, but try not to disturb it too much, but just kind of raise it a little bit. But,
all right. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Hort Day on Talk of Iowa. You can join the conversation. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester, Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Randall Voss, Iowa State University Commercial Fruit Crop Specialist. This is Talk of Iowa.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Randall Voss is Iowa State University Commercial Fruit Crop Specialist. And Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester. And let's go back to the phones. Bill is on the line in Hamilton, Missouri. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how are you all today?
Good. What's your question?
Hey, listen, I have been planting a lilac bush for several years, and they keep dying. We have one out. Another question is, we have a lilac bush out of one of the farms, and how do you dig them up and transplant them? But most of all, what do I need to do to the new ones? Thank you.
I'll start with the first part, and then Aaron can talk about the digging them up or taking cuttings or whatever. Generally, Bill, if a plant is not surviving in the first year or two, it's usually a couple things. Usually it's the condition of the plant when you got it. Maybe the roots aren't big enough, or maybe it got exposed to heat or those kinds of things during storage. Or a lot of times it's too much or not enough water. If a plant starts to leaf out and then it dies, in most cases on those new plants, it's typically not disease or insect. It's often too much moisture or not enough. So those are probably some of the issues. And if there's a specific area that you're having problems, I would look at the internal soil, look at the soil in that area and see if there's a little clay. Maybe it's really sandy. Just see if there's conditions that may. I mean, lilacs are pretty tough, but if you've got something in the soil or something, that could be part of it too. Aaron?
Yeah, and in terms of, you know, transplanting, the lilac naturally suckers. And so you'll see these little offshoots come off. Usually it's not very far away from the main kind of crown or cluster of branches at the base, but you'll see them there. I find that early spring, as they're emerging, is the easiest time to do this. You're going to dig down, and I like to use a sharp spade so I can cut through that root that attaches it to the main clump. Try to keep as much of the soil around that root system as you can and move it into its new location as soon as you can. If it's right away, that's the best. But if you need to, of course, you know, you can put it in an old nursery pot and get it to its new location. You could even put it in a bag as long as you plan to plant it right away. You can't leave it in the bag for any extended amount of time. But those are all pretty good options for that, and can be a great way to get a new lilac from something that you already have.
Bill, thanks for the call. Next up, let's go to Farial in Des Moines. Hello. Farial, are you there?
Hi. Yeah, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I have two questions. One is about ant infestation in the yard. And then the other one, we have a couple of trees which are actually on our side in mulch, but their roots are exposed out and they're kind of like on the surface in the yard. And whenever we mow the yard, we hit those roots. And I'm not sure what to do with them or if they are going to be something that will also be a problem for the foundation of the house, although they're at least 10, 15 feet out.
All right. Well, let's start with those tree roots. Mark, what do you think?
So you're probably going to have a long-term issue with these tree roots. Anytime, especially if it's a newer yard or house, new soil, those kind of things, those soils tend to be fairly shallow. And if the conditions aren't very good for development, those roots will tend to stay where there's good moisture, good oxygen. And if that is a few inches below the soil or just at the soil line, that's where they're going to stay. So those roots really aren't going to disappear. And as they grow, they're going to get bigger in diameter and they're going to kind of raise out of the ground, so to speak. So those are always going to be issues. So the thing you have to think about is, can you mulch a larger area and kind of keep that as a bed? Because if you continue to mow over them and cause damage long-term, those are going to be entry areas for wounds that could cause decay and could cause issues. So you kind of have to make the decision, do I want to turn that to maybe a perennial area where I can mulch it and stuff and kind of keep it that way, or make some other kind of decision. But if you can mulch that area, that would probably be the best. And even with mulch, those roots are going to continue to rise. As far as the foundation, if you're 10 feet away, most major roots, you have to have the tree much closer. And usually with foundations, the roots will hit it and move to the side. So usually unless that tree, big tree trunk, is like 3 or 4 feet away or 5 or 6, it's usually not going to be a big issue. So your biggest is just going to be, do I mulch or do I decide that maybe this isn't going to work long term? Or you just try to work really hard to avoid hitting those roots as you mow, or use a lighter trimmer or something around those areas as you mow to avoid that damage.
And let's talk ants now. What you said, you have a lot of ants in the yard. What does the problem seem to be specifically?
It's just that they're in the yard, and then when we have them in the yard, they of course come inside too. I don't know how they come inside the house. It's the first year that we ever got them in the house. They were never in there earlier.
All right. Well, they're very, very small. Aaron, what do you think?
Yeah. So sometimes we'll see, I mean, ants are always busy. It feels like they're really busy this time of year. We often see the ant hills kind of pile up in our lawns that can kind of smother grass and things like that. You can always rake down those piles as you see them. Overall, ants do a lot of really positive things for the environment, for our gardens, for our lawn, all of those things. And so, but if you're worried about the ant hill, or if you're worried about them coming into your home, you can use insecticide dust. You would spread it at the kind of opening or the hill, and that will knock back the colony. It probably will not eliminate it from your yard, but it'll definitely keep the population much lower. And if you're having issues in your home, then you kind of want to shift gears to, talking to pest control folks who specialize in pest control in your home rather than in the gardens.
Fariel, thanks so much for the call. Let's go now back to a weeping cherry tree and Cindy in Des Moines. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, similar to the question the fellow had earlier, I just noticed a couple days ago that a weeping cherry tree in the front of our house, and we've only lived in the house a couple of years, so I've never had one of these before. And I noticed a couple days ago that the new leaves were all drying up and turning brown on one branch, and today there's several more branches. It's almost like half the tree is doing that. The tree's about 10 foot across and 6 foot high. So I'm wondering, can I put some compost, some kind of, something raked into the grass below it to give it some nutrients? Would it need watering? It seems like we've had enough rain, but I don't want to lose it. So,
Aaron, you want to take that one too?
Yeah, I'll comment on a few of the environmental things, and Randall might be able to comment on what, because the same diseases that impact the kinds of cherries we eat would impact the ornamental ones too, and maybe he has some ideas there. But in terms of any ornamental cherry tree, they are not long-term additions to an Iowa landscape. Usually 10, 20 years, and that tree encounters enough disease or environmental stresses to kind of make it not a very attractive tree anymore and worth removing from the yard. I don't know how old this tree is, although it's probably not quite that old yet, it doesn't sound like. But there's not much more you would do to this tree if it's just environmental stress than other than trying to give it the best care possible. So checking the soil, if it is dry, providing a little bit of moisture might be good. Putting a little bit of mulch down to help reduce competition in the root zone area from weeds or other plants would probably help. Fertilizing probably isn't going to really make a huge difference. Most of our trees don't need a lot of fertilizer, especially if we're already fertilizing our lawns nearby. So
yeah, I don't do that.
So fertilizer probably isn't going to make a huge difference. It's really just making sure to provide the best care possible. If the branches are dead, you can prune them out. I don't know if Randall has any ideas about any other things.
Yeah, so a couple things with cherries. They're super prone to bacterial diseases. And when you do prune them, making sure you're not doing it when it's wet out is a pretty big deal, just because those bacterial diseases spread in moisture. The other thing, like Aaron said, they're not super cold hardy, and so we can get some vascular damage. So those pipes, so to speak, in the trunk or the branches, maybe they had some winter damage, is fine in the spring when it was fairly cool, but now that the temperatures are warming up, sometimes the water and so forth can't, or nutrients and all that, it can't get to the new part of the plant quick enough, and so it just collapses. So as it gets hotter, so. Those are a couple thoughts. I do want to mention one more thing to the gentleman that called about peaches. The other thing that could cause those malformed peaches could be stink bug damage. So kind of circling back to about 45 minutes ago, but that's another thing he could think about. So.
The brain just keeps on spinning, doesn't it? Mark, did you have something you want to add?
I was just going to add, Cindy, as you're pruning and stuff, I would actually look where the transition area between the live and dead is. And sometimes we can have cankers, and those could be weather-related. Those could be pathogen-related. But there might be a sunken area or discolored area kind of where you see the dead and then beyond that the live. Look for those kind of areas. And if you find some of those areas, you could take some samples and go to the Plant Diagnostic Clinic website and send some samples in just to see if it's a specific canker or not. But that's another thing to look for as you're doing your pruning.
All right, Cindy, thanks so much for the call. And Darren is on the line in Newton with a tree question for you, Mark. Hi, Darren.
Hey, how's it going? So we just bought a house. Somebody had made a half-hearted attempt at a retaining wall. In the back, it's a pretty severe slope into the back of the house. So I'm going to redo that wall but in regrading, we've got a ton of oak trees in the yard, and I was wondering how much I can put around the, you know, as I regrade and raise the kind of level of the yard, how high up can I go without damaging the oak trees, or in the back of the yard, how far down can I go? Or do I need to, like, put stones around them and try to maintain the level?
So basically, Darren, if you measure the diameter of the trunk of those trees, and let's say it's 10 inches, the diameter at 4.5 feet off the ground, and you multiply that times 1.5, my math is correct, that's 15 feet, or 15, and I would convert that to 15 feet. And so you would want 15 foot of radial protection and 30 foot of diameter protection where you wouldn't make any changes around that tree. If you make any changes, even adding 1 or 2 inches of soil, that could have some very long-term impacts on those trees. And the older they are, the less likely they're going to adapt to those changes. So any way you can avoid any changes, at a minimum, staying outside the drip line where the edge of the branches, try to stay outside of those areas. But if you enter into those drip line areas with any kind of site changes on oak, you could have some issues long term.
Darren, thanks a lot for the call. We're going to try to get through some email questions here before we run out of time. Sue in Dubuque says, I have applied mulch for years to my flower garden, but I'm now starting to allow ground cover to grow in the bed. The flower bed is on top of a retaining wall, and I will not have to worry about the ground cover spreading beyond the bed. Can you comment on the advantages or disadvantages of ground cover in a flower garden? Do I keep it or not?
You know, some folks really like, they almost treat them like a green living mulch kind of situation. They will potentially be a little bit competitive, especially with maybe the kinds of perennials that aren't particularly robust. And so you'd have to kind of make sure that they don't choke out some of your other desirable plants. In general, they can be fine, although I will also say that you will definitely run into gardeners who absolutely hate having ground cover in that area because they do tend to be very aggressive spreaders. And sometimes it can be really hard to manage that. So if you can kind of keep them from taking over, they can be a nice addition to the garden, I think.
All right. Randy says, I had a beautiful locust tree that the derecho took out. I would like to replace it. The locust we had gave off shoots in the lawn. I needed to break them off several times a week. Is there a locust that doesn't send out shoots, Mark?
There are, but there could have been issues related to that. But I would definitely look at just an urban cultivar. Iowa State has some good list. Iowa DNR has some list. If it was a wild one, that could be one reason that it sprouted. But in general, I would look at some of the urban varieties or selections, and usually that's not a major issue.
All right. Lisa has a really fun question. She says, can you recommend a tasty yellow cherry tomato variety? Most I've tried are pasty and tasteless except for 1 year, and I don't know what the variety was. There's still time this year. Randall, do you have a favorite yellow cherry tomato?
You bet. Sun Gold, hands down.
Oh, I was going to say Sun Gold, too.
It splits in the rain quite a bit, but it's delicious.
All right. Lisa, I hope that is the solution. And she also says, the north end of my vegetable garden is sloping downhill to the north. What can I add to help break up the dirt clumps there to make it more amenable to producing a good crop? Aaron?
I mean, compost is always a nice thing to add in to help loosen up soil and introduce organic matter that would help in particular in a vegetable garden.
All right. And we are out of time. Aaron Stile, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Randall Voss, thank you.
Thank you.
Randall Voss is Iowa State University Commercial Fruit Crop Specialist. Mark Vitosh, thank you very much, sir.
Always a pleasure.
Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester. Of course, we'll be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is a production of IPR News. Our producers are Samantha McIntosh, Caitlin Troutman, and Danny Gear. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had technical support today from Steve Cooper. You can get in touch with us anytime. Just email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. www.ntsnpodcast.org. And of course, you never need to miss an episode. Subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great weekend.